Today's episode of the Retro Asylum podcast is proudly brought to you by Endangered Mice. For all the latest news and updates on the amazing Starquake remake, please check out www.endangeredmice.co.uk.
Welcome back to another episode of the UK's number one retro gaming podcast, The Retro Asylum. This is episode 23 and a half. And today, I'm joined by one of our guests. I'll tell you who that is in one second, because we've got another retro community summer episode. And today's guest is Darren. How you doing, buddy?
Hello. Thanks for having me on the show.
I'm glad to have you on the show. Now, for those people that don't know, and for those people that do know, basically, Darren is our forum moderator.
That's right, yes.
So I'm really glad to have you on the show. So, all right, before we find out how you got into gaming and stuff, let's just tell people how you came across our site, first of all.
Well, similar to Scopey, I was on YouTube looking at retro videos of Spectrum stuff, and I came across your 8-Bit Wars.
Ah, yeah.
And, I just fell in love with it straight away. It's one of those things. I mean, back in the day, there was always the sort of schoolyard rivalry between sort of Spectrum and Commodore. And it's always been a bit curious to sort of, like, see what these games were like on these different systems.
Yeah.
So, I started watching them, and I just basically subscribed from there. And going from there then, I joined your site, which was 1HMPS Retro, and just followed you from there.
And then eventually, because you were always on the site and you're really, really sort of always, you know, doing things there, posting things on the forum, and because you're a good presence there, I thought, you know, why not make you a forum moderator? And you've done an amazing job so far.
Thank you.
Right, so, all right, let's cut to the chase. Why don't you tell us then how you first got into gaming right back in time?
Right, well, I was always a little bit too young for sort of arcades. I mean, I was born in the early 80s, and sort of by the time I was actually old enough to go to an arcade, they were pretty much phasing out. So my first experience was probably the home computer. And I remember probably when I was about 5 or 6, I came home from school and my dad was setting up a Spectrum on a television, basically. And he was wrestling with it. I mean, it was the 128K. He was trying to plug up a tape deck to it,
yeah,
trying to get games to run. It was an absolute nightmare. We weren't getting anywhere for ages. But in the end, we got it up and running. And the first game I think I played was Forbidden Planet, which I believe it was a sequel to another game called Dark Star. It's basically sort of like Star Wars, that sort of thing. You're basically in a spaceship flying over sort of like enemies and basically just taking them out. I mean, from there on, I was hooked. It's just literally, the thing about computers is it's a level of interaction that you just don't get from a film. You don't get from a board game, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I fell in love with the machine from there, and I just carried on playing up until this day.
So what are the other games in that came with your ZX Spectrum that your dad had bought?
Yeah, well, he had sort of a pack called Computer Hits, and on there there was, like, Forbidden Planet, there was Herbert's Dummy Run, and then we also had, I think it also came with Daily Thompson's Super Test.
Yeah.
And The Neverending Story, which was, like, a text-based adventure game based on the film. Yeah, quite a few little games to go through there. But,
okay, then. So, you know that compilation thing that you mentioned? I think I might have had the same one. It had 10 games in it. Is that right?
Yes, I think there was, like, Cauldron, and I think there was, like, Jeff Cape's Strongman and some other...
Love that game. I was actually going to do a review in that game.
Oh, I'd love to see that, yeah. Absolutely love those games. But, I think Herbert's Dummy Run is the one that stands out for me on that sort of pack. It's... I mean, if you haven't played it, it's you're basically stuck in a sort of shopping mall as a little child, and it's like a little puzzle game, but it's sort of combining sort of platforming elements. You pick up items, and you've got to get from room to room, and then, like, all the sort of toys and things have come to life, and you've got to try and avoid them.
It's got a lot of variety, that game. I'm sure it's got one level, which is sort of like Space Invaders, but you've got to shoot Daleks, I think.
And that's right, yes.
Well, where this ball, you've got to hit it, and it bounces off your head, and it bounces off the wall, sort of like Breakout as well.
Yes.
A lot of variation in that game. It's actually a follow-up or a sequel as such to, I think it's Pyjama-rama or something it was called.
Oh, right, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think there's a few other games that came up beforehand. So, at school then, what did your friends have then? Did they have ZX Spectrums?
Yeah, the majority of them had Spectrums. There were a couple of people who had Commodore 64s. I didn't actually know anyone who had an Amstrad until... even now, I still don't know anyone who owns an Amstrad. It's just one of those random machines. But, I mean, you look at the sort of 8-bit war videos you did. I mean, the Amstrad is quite a good machine, you know? Some of the games on there were a lot better than what you could get on the Spectrum or the Commodore.
I always thought that the Amstrad was the most underrated machine. I don't think it was as cheap as the Spectrum. It was a little bit higher price because of the monitor and everything. And the C64, well, it had that amazing music. So back at school then, what did the C64 owners treat you like for being a Spectrum owner?
Oh, right, yes. I mean, there was you basically become a fanboy, don't you? You sort of stick with whatever sort of machine you have, and you won't hear anything bad about it. And, of course, the Spectrum was legendary for its color clash, and, I mean, you didn't have that on the Commodore. But then, I mean, it seemed to be better resolution on the Spectrum, so you'd always throw that back in their face, you know? So. But, no, I mean, there were some lovely games on the Commodore. I mean, you had that, there was Ghostbusters on there. I mean, the version of Outrun was probably the best out of all the ones that came out.
Yeah. Hello, this is Potty Boy, and you're listening to the UK's number one retro gaming podcast, The Retro Asylum.
So after the ZX Spectrum then, like, where did you go owning computer-wise? What was your next step into gaming from there?
I mean, I stayed with the Spectrum for quite a while. My 128K Spectrum died eventually. It was the Z and the X key died from playing too much Daily Thompson Super Test, I think.
Yeah.
So I remember it must have been probably 1989. I had a Spectrum Plus 2, which came with sort of the light phaser.
Oh, wow.
And the sort of James Bond pack. Now, the light phaser was absolutely useless. It's just one of those things that never really worked properly from what I could gather.
Yeah,
but it was a nice novelty.
What I was going to say to you then, Darren, why don't you tell us then, in the meantime, before we move on to your next console then, what were some of your favourite ZX Spectrum games and why?
Right, I'd say probably, the Dizzy games are legendary on the Spectrum.
I'd say
probably Fantasy World Dizzy is probably the best of the bunch. First Dizzy game I played was probably Treasure Island Dizzy, but I think they've managed to nail down the formula with Fantasy World Dizzy. You had all the lives and that, and the puzzle elements just seemed to work a lot better. Other games I enjoyed, I mean, Renegade. I can't go on about Renegade enough. I used to love that game to death. It was the sequel Target Renegade, but I still think Renegade probably still tops it as the better version. And then obviously you've also got Chase HQ then. Chase HQ is probably one of the best ports, probably one of the best games ever released on the Spectrum, if you ask me.
Totally agree with you. I think Chase HQ, the conversion of the ZX Spectrum, is probably even better than some of the other more powerful machines that came out on. It's just pure perfection, that game. Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, I think it even had voice sampling in it, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I think it did right at the beginning.
Yeah.
So let's move on to your next little question then. So where did you eventually go from the ZX Spectrum then, from the Plus 2?
Right, well, I mean, towards the end of the sort of Spectrum days, I had Street Fighter 2 on there, and it was just absolutely dire. And I remember seeing my friend's Master System, and he had a version of Street Fighter 2 on there, and I was thinking, this is so much better. I've got to get this. So I ended up... probably about 91, I think it was, I ended up buying a Master System 2.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, and then I had quite a nice little collection of games on there. There was Enduro Racer, Double Dragon.
Classic, love that.
Yeah, and then there's ports of like Castle of Illusion and Street Fighter, which are all, you know, pretty good sort of like conversions of the 16-bit games.
So what did you think the main differences were then from going from a ZX Spectrum Plus 2? Because it sounds like you went on the same path as me.
Yeah, well, I mean, with a Spectrum, you're sat there waiting 6 or 7 minutes for the games to load, and often by which point you've lost interest in the game. So going from that to like a cartridge-based system where you just pop the game in, switch it on, and just straight in there, you know, it's you've got no color clash going on. It's a dedicated games machine, you know?
Yeah.
I think the only downside with it is, obviously, on the Spectrum, the games you're looking from a budget title is about £3, and then like a top title is about £10. But on the Master System, I mean, the games are all about £30 a piece.
Darren, I was going to say, that is an interesting point, because, you know, most kids back in the day, you know, £1.99, £2.99, special occasions, £10.99 for a budget game on the Spectrum was expected, but paying, what, £30 for a Master System game was very steep.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it became the point where it was just sort of like Christmas presents and birthday presents you'd end up having games. Mm-hmm. I was quite lucky near me that there was a video shop that also rented out Master System games, so I could try out quite a lot of these games, and, you know, if I enjoyed them, end up buying them. But, it's a nice little system, the Master System, too. I think the only downside with it, it was never really a top title on there, whereas, like, the Nintendo had the Mario Brothers. There was never really anything on the Master System that really sort of made it shine apart.
I don't know, I think I've got a slight disagree. I mean, I think, because a few years ago, I gave away my Sega Master System, and I wish I hadn't, but there were some amazing games like Castle of Illusions, Sonic the Hedgehog, Wonder Boy 3, The Dragon's Trap, Zillion. There's so many absolute classics, and I think Swaney from the site has recently started collecting Master System games again.
Right, okay.
What made you choose, then, the Master System as opposed to the 8-bit NES?
I mean, it was the graphics more than anything. The Nintendo had been out for quite a few years at this point, and the Master System, I think, was technically the better system. The graphics are better. The game should have been better, but I think maybe not. And, it was just a step up, really, from the Spectrum.
Well, I think Sega marketed it really, really well over here, because Nintendo, even though it was a big brand name and just was so dominant in the US, over here, it still didn't sort of advertise. You couldn't really feel it over here. And the Sega Master System was absolutely everywhere. Well, it was where I grew up.
This is Matt Denaris. When the modern world is taking its toll on me, I tune into the Retro Asylum podcast.
Right, where did you go from the Sega Master System then, Darren?
I mean, from there, I went straight to the Mega Drive, really. Probably about 93 or 94, I think I had the Mega Drive. It was a big step up from the Master System. I'd say a lot of the Master System games were probably sort of ports of these sort of 16-bit Mega Drive versions.
Yeah.
And this was like, you know, a proper games machine now, you know. This is like practically like arcade level, a lot of these games. But, really, one of my favorite machines of all time is the Mega Drive. You've got some really great titles on there, like Road Rash, Streets of Rage, the Sonic games. There's just so many.
So what was one of the main reasons then for getting a Sega Mega Drive? Because that roughly came out around the same sort of time as the Super Nintendo.
At the time I didn't really know anyone who had a Super Nintendo, whereas
really?
I did have quite a few friends who had Mega Drive. So again, I'd say it's probably down to the sort of like the cost of the games. You can swap games with your friends and things like that, and I think that was probably the deciding factor.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a lovely machine, absolutely lovely. You've got other games like Earthworm Jim and Echo the Dolphin, stuff like that, which is just like, even to this day, really good games.
I know, definitely. I mean, some of my favourite games ever are on the Sega Mega Drive. I love the Streets of Rage series. I love Strider, Ghouls and Ghosts, which is a superb arcade conversion. It's still a great machine, and I might pick one up at some point. All right, so after the Sega Mega Drive then, from the 16-bit generation, where did you take it from there?
This is when I went and got a Super Nintendo.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, the Super Nintendo had been out for quite a while, but I think I was getting a little bit bored of the Mega Drive, and I ended up exchanging it for a Super Nintendo. And
for what sort of reasons then were you getting bored of the Mega Drive then?
The one thing I would say about the Mega Drive is a lot of the games are very much sort of arcade based, very sort of shoot 'em ups, that sort of thing, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas like if you have a look at the Super Nintendo, their games tend to be a lot more experimental. I mean, you've got things like SimCity on there, you've got Wing Commander. So, I mean, you've still got the sort of usual sort of like shoot 'em ups and things like that, but it just seemed like they were more willing to sort of branch out and just try different things. Mm-hmm. And that really did appeal at the time, you know, where you're playing sort of like, say, a sandbox game like SimCity, where there's no sort of real goal. And I mean, yeah, you can still sort of destroy your city and whatever, but the whole idea is that it's all like sort of a game where you're creating stuff, where rather than just sort of like shooting aliens or like dodging monsters or whatever.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting take on that, because a lot of times when I speak to people, they mostly point out the superior colour on the snares or the better sounds. But it's interesting that you did mention that it had a different sort of genre type games as opposed to the arcade style games.
Mm, absolutely, yeah. I mean, I remember that Lemmings came out on the Super Nintendo, and that even had a two-player mode, which was a little bizarre for a sort of like a strategy puzzle game. But, you know, it's stuff like that just worked really well on the machine. You know, it's just nice to see them sort of branching out and just trying something a little bit different.
Mm-hmm. No, I completely, totally agree with you. I mean, I was lucky enough to have, I think, a Mega Drive first, then a Super Nintendo, but I think I was working by the time the Super Nintendo came out, so I could afford both of them, and I had the best of both worlds, I guess, really. Right, so from the Super Nintendo then, where did you go next?
I mean, again, I had the Super Nintendo for many years, and then from there, I moved on to sort of PC gaming, probably about 1998, I think I bought my first PC.
Right, well, why don't you tell us a little bit about this, because that is a generation of sort of PC that I missed out, because I kept on going on from consoles from there. So why don't you tell us the sort of games and why you chose to go down that route then?
I mean, the PlayStation was out at the time, and you also had the Sega Saturn, and there were some very impressive games on there. But the deciding factor was more to do with schoolwork. I was getting to that sort of age where I'm doing my GCSEs, and I needed a computer for school. So, you know, my parents sort of fronted up the cash, and we bought a PC, and then, you know, I just carried on my gaming from there. But it's quite an interesting thing with the PC, because it was always a sort of underrated sort of gaming machine to start with, and then they sort of brought out the 3D accelerator cards, at which point it just kind of strided leaps ahead of the competition, the PlayStation and the Saturn.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, there were some nice games on there. There was, I mean, you've got obviously like Doom and Quake and things like that. I used to enjoy the Wing Commander series as well, which was Wing Commander 3 and 4. It was like six CDs or something like that.
Now, do you tend to play some of these games now at some point and look back onto them?
Absolutely. I still play Doom and Quake all the time. I mean, we were playing the tournament the other day at Doom and using Skull Tag. And that was absolutely...
Oh, yeah. You've been playing with the guys from Retro Resistance.
From Retro Resistance, yes.
On a Sunday, they've been doing this.
Yeah.
Have you been finding playing with those guys then?
Difficult. They're all very good.
Yeah, I've heard that Blim is the best player out of everyone there.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, it's taken me years to sort of learn how to play a game with a mouse and a keyboard, really, especially after, you know, using controllers all the time. But... you know, you see some of these people, and they've really got it down, you know.
No, completely. All right, so we're going to move on to a whole different topic now. What I want to find out from you now, then, Darren, is what are three games you could play forever?
Oh, right. Now that's a very difficult question, because I mean, there's so many games. I would probably narrow it down to say the Super Nintendo and the Mega Drive, and I would probably say Road Rash on the Mega Drive. Streets of Rage 2, and possibly Wing Commander on the Super Nintendo.
All right, why don't you tell us about Road Rash then on the Mega Drive? Why would that be one of the games then you'd play forever?
I mean, Road Rash was a lovely game in its day. It's you're basically it's a racing game with a difference. You're on a motorbike, but the whole idea is that you sort of attack the other person with weaponry to sort of get the edge, and It gets a little bit sadistic towards the later levels, because you start off and you go from these sort of like 5-minute road races to sometimes, I mean, you'd be playing for 40 minutes on a particular map, you know?
Yeah.
It just would never end. And of course, it's a game of endurance then, because your bike is sort of getting damaged every time you have a crash. Mm-hmm. And it's whether or not you can actually even make it to the end of the game, you know?
But, did you play any of the later versions of this? Well, there's Road Rash 2.
Yeah, Road Rash 2, especially because, again, that has the two-player mode on it. So you team up with a friend, and that's it then. You know, it's you've got chains and clubs and all sorts. And, you know, it's a nice little fun game to play.
Do you reckon that's the sort of game that would work nowadays? Because I know a lot of people are so fond of this game that, you know, they really are crying out for a sequel to this.
I would absolutely love it if they released a sequel to this game. Even if it was exactly the same as it is now, just with maybe updated graphics or something. You know, it's such a fun little game to play. I don't think there is anything like it at the moment, you know. You've still got racing games and things like that, but, you know, to sort of combine a beat-em-up with a racing game, just, you know, you just don't see it.
I'd love to see something like this on their PSN or the, you know, the Xbox 360, playing it on, you know, playing it against a bunch of other people, racing, beating the crap out of each other, doing achievements. It would add so much already to an amazing game. It'd be fantastic.
Absolutely.
What was the other game that you chose and that you say you could play forever?
I'd say Streets of Rage 2. No, I'm aware that you're a big fan of the Streets of Rage series.
Love it.
Yeah, I think it was yourself who put me onto the sort of Streets of Rage remake, which was the sort of fan-based remake of all the games in one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think Streets of Rage 2 is definitely the best version of the lot. It's a really good game. Again, I mean, you've got the two-player mode on it. It's, it's basically based on Final Fight, isn't it, at the end of the day?
Yeah.
But this, I think it just goes beyond the competition. It just became a better game. The sum of the parts were better.
No, I completely, totally agree with you, because I think that game has got, it's pure perfection. It's got a distinctive look. It's bright. It's colourful. The animation's amazing. And the music is superb.
Yeah, absolutely.
No,
yeah.
Okay, you'd settle something with me there, because Swain, he still claims that Double Dragon is better than Streets of Rage 2. I mean, I don't see it. I think Double Dragon was a great game, but Streets of Rage 2 has still aged fantastically and is still playable to this day.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a much better game, if you ask me. I quite like Double Dragon, but this is a vast improvement on the same sort of formula, you know?
Mm. So what did you think of the Bomber Games remake then? How did you know, as a fan of Streets of Rage 2, how did you feel that these guys did with this game?
It's almost identical to the original sort of Streets of Rage 2, but with extended sort of sections, you know? I think there's one bit where you're walking into the bar, and normally in the original game you could carry on going right, and you just sort of carry on through the level. But on this version, you could go up the sort of stairs.
Yeah.
Up a level, and then from there, it would take you on a completely different path, you know, completely different game altogether, you know. But they'd managed to catch the spirit of what made Streets of Rage really good and just expanded on it.
It's a great game, and for our listeners who, if they haven't played it, you can find that at Bomber Games. I'm sure if you look, Google it, you'll find it. It's a great remake of an already fantastic game then. All right, your third game then that you could play forever then?
Yes, I'd say Wing Commander. The original sort of Wing Commander, I first played it on the Super Nintendo. Again, like I said, this isn't the sort of thing that you normally saw on the Mega Drive. It's something that sort of branched out on the Super Nintendo. But I think it was a remake of sort of like the Amiga and the Atari version.
Yeah.
But it was just very, very well done. I mean, it sort of combined space combat with sort of like little mini cutscenes. But you really got attached to the characters in the game. You know, you'd have these sort of like meetings with them in the bar, for instance, and they would chat to you about the missions. And then you'd sort of go on sort of missions with them. And if they didn't make it back alive, then the next time you'd be in the bar, there'd be like an empty seat where they used to be. Yeah. Also, I mean, there was like a branching sort of mission structure on it, where if you start off doing really badly on the missions, rather than sort of game over, the game would carry on. But then the missions would get more and more tougher, and then you become more and more sort of defensive.
I'll tell you what, it's one of the games I've heard so much about, and I'll be completely honest, I haven't really, really played it. I think it's a game that, you know, a lot of people have sort of really sort of like highly of it, so I might have to give it a go on emulation.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, it spawned so many sequels as well, and every single one of those games was really good. It just sort of carried on the spirit of the original, but I'd say definitely try the original, because it still stands up to this day.
Oh, I will do then. I will do, mate. Now, I've got another little continuing question to the question I just asked. Now, you've got these three games. Now, you've got one person that you could play these three games with. Who would it be? anyone.
Well, I'd have to say my wife, but no. I don't know, to be honest. I mean, would I want to take someone on a desert island with me who's like a developer or something like that, someone who enjoys these games?
It can be absolutely anyone. Anyone you want to be, it can be anyone.
Maybe I would take Colin Jones, who was a programmer on Rockstar at My Hamster, because he's also from Bridgend, so
okay. You
know, the legend.
Yeah, the legend, Colin Jones, which I think we interviewed with him, I think episode 15 or 16.
Absolutely, yeah. Such a lovely man, yeah.
Definitely. It was a real pleasure actually interviewing him. Really down to earth, really nice. And he sent me an email last week. He's got a new game, which I might as well promote now. I think it's called Eek, It's a Bomb, which is out on the iPhone and on the iPad. So check it out, guys.
Awesome.
Right, so let's move on to the next question is, what is your favorite console ever or computer and why?
This would be a difficult one. I mean, I would say the PC is by far probably the best gaming machine you could ever buy, just for the fact that you've got emulation on it. You can sort of emulate any sort of console that's ever existed, pretty much. But I suppose that's cheating a little bit, really.
Yeah, if you go for the overall look and feel, nostalgia, you know, like how you feel, you know, if you look at one of these machines, it makes you think, wow.
I would say it would be a toss-up between either the Mega Drive or the Super Nintendo then. I mean, I think the Mega Drive is a very sleek-looking sort of machine, especially sort of the original version of it. But then I think maybe the Super Nintendo probably trumps it just for the fact that the games are just so different on it, you know?
All right, so which one would you choose then? Mega Drive or Super Nintendo?
I think I would go for the Super Nintendo.
Hey, that's a win for the good old N. So the Super Nintendo would win. Yeah, to be honest with you, I love both machines as well, Darren. Recently, I love the Mega Drive slightly more, but for me, nostalgia-wise, I've got to go for the Super Nintendo because it had Street Fighter 2, and I loved that. It's one of the main reasons I bought that console, for Street Fighter 2.
Yeah, absolutely. I think my Super Nintendo came with the original Street Fighter 2 as well, yeah.
So lucky, because I think I bought mine separately. I got mine imported from Japan, I think, and it cost me about 120 whatever pounds.
Wow.
Hello everybody, this is Damien and you're listening to Retro Asylum, the best retro gaming podcast.
Okay, we've asked you how you found a site, but what I want to find out now is, how did you get back into gaming? Because, you know, we all grow up, we all sort of have girlfriends, we go to college, we do different things, and we have a little lull in our gaming history. How did you get back into it?
I mean, in all honesty, I've always been a gamer. It's one of those things. I started off when I was young, and I still do it to this day. There have been sort of lulls where I kind of sort of gone off it a little bit, but you just always come back to it. It's one of those things. I think I'll always be a gamer. I'll always be playing games, modern games, retro games. But it's just a love for the media. There's nothing like it, you know.
Yeah. Do you collect any machines at all or anything?
And unfortunately, no. All the machines I've had in the past have either broken or I've sold to buy better machines. The only machine I tried to keep was my Spectrum Plus 2. And yeah. My parents decided to get rid of it in a house move once, so I lost that. I would love to get a collection. The only downside with collecting it, I'm sure you're aware, is the amount of space it just takes up. You know, it's you end up having to dedicate an entire room for all of it. So, you know, maybe one day, but I'm quite happy with sticking with emulation more than anything.
You know what? I completely agree with you. I think emulation's absolutely fantastic. I know you get your diehard fans that say, no, you don't get the same feel of it. But you know what? I'm more than happy sitting in my room with my laptop playing some classics with a control pad. And to me, yeah, fair enough. It's not connected to one of those old style TVs, or it's not on the proper machine, but it still feels and plays just as good and brings back those memories.
It's a close enough approximation of the original game, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Got another question for you, which is, what is your WTF game, a game that you hate with a vengeance that's so horrible?
Right, okay. I'm probably not going to get many fans for this one, but I have to say Alex Kidd in Miracle World came with the Master System 2, and I cannot think of a worse game on the system. It's I mean, it's quite clearly meant to be a rival to Super Mario Brothers, but yeah, it just goes wrong in every sense. Whereas Super Mario Brothers has got these iconic tunes, the music on this is just obnoxious. It's just horrendous. The bosses on Super Mario Brothers, you've got like a variety of different bosses at the end of every castle. On this, it's literally a game of sort of paper, scissors, stone, which, you know, just I don't understand it at all. But it's like, even the sort of little innovations that they tried to bring in, they sort of bring in like vehicles where you've got like a helicopter or you've got like a little motorbike. And as soon as you sort of hit any sort of obstacle, you just lose it. It's kind of like, here's all these wonderful toys to play with, but you can't touch them. You know,
it's... I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm a big fan of Alex Kidd, but I'm not a hater like, say, Malk is, who called Alex Kidd a jug-eared twat.
I think that's very true.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's, you know, a silly little character. The game's not that bad, but I think Sega was so desperately looking for a Mario beta, and unfortunately, you know, Alex Kidd just couldn't, I don't know,
it just
get to the fight.
It just, you know, absolutely fails. I mean, I've not played the other sequels, the ones that came out on the Mega Drive, for instance, so I don't know if they ever improved on the sort of formula, but I just think for a game that comes with the system, they couldn't have made a worse choice.
Yeah, I
mean, you'd often get this sort of situation as well where you plug in a game into the system and if it couldn't read it, all of a sudden you'd get the Alex Kidd music just starting up because it would start the game instead and it'd just be, oh, the amount of times my Master System almost went out the window because of it.
Oh, well, you know what? I mean, I think it's an all right game, you know. Out of five, I'd probably score it like, I don't know, a three. You know, it's not rubbish, it's not great, but yeah, you know what, that's fair enough. So our next section is Name the Game. Now in this section, me and Swaney normally do it throughout the normal podcast, and I've decided to try and test Darren. So Darren, what you need to try and do is ask me questions and I can only answer in yes or no.
Right, okay.
So Darren, can you name that game?
Okay, did the game come out on the Mega Drive?
Yes.
Is it a platformer?
Yes.
Is there a blue hedgehog in it?
Nope.
Right, okay. Is there a monkey boy in it?
Nope.
Does it star Michael Jackson?
Nope. Maybe it's a little bit obscure. I don't know, I don't want to give you too many clues.
Right, no,
Go on, you can ask any sort of questions. What generation of you've already said it was on the Mega Drive, didn't you?
Did it come out on any other systems?
Nope.
I'm trying to think of games now. Does it involve an earthworm?
Nope.
A dolphin?
Nope. I'll give you a clue. It's a platformer.
Trying to think of other platformers. The problem is there's so many on the Mega Drive.
Do you want another clue?
Yes, please.
Right, if I give you this clue, I think everyone that's listening to the show will probably go, Darren, come on. It's a Mario Brothers clone, pretty much.
A Mario Brothers clone?
Super Mario Brothers clone.
Trying to think.
It's such a rip-off. I mean, it's almost as blatant as Great Gianna Sisters.
I'm trying to think. No, I might have to admit defeat on this one.
Really? Okay, I'll give you a clue. The first word in this game begins with a K, so it's kid. And it's two different words, so it's kid something.
Kid.
It recently was included in the Sega Mega Drive compilation. Do you want to give up?
I'm going to give up, yes.
Right, so that game was Kid Chameleon.
Oh, you're joking, of course.
Kid Chameleon, which was pretty much a Super Mario Brothers clone. It's a great little game, really underrated. I think a lot of people didn't give it enough time because they thought it was a rip-off, but it's a great little game, nevertheless.
I'm going to have to look into that one.
Oh, definitely. Give it a go. Play it on emulation. Right, so now it's time for you to get revenge. Let's do that. Name that game.
Right, okay.
Have you thought of the game?
I have.
Streets of Rage 2.
No.
Right. Is it an 8-bit game?
Yes.
Was it originally an arcade game?
No.
Did it appear on the 16-bit systems?
A version of it, but it wasn't the same one.
Does it star an egg?
No.
Oh. Is it a platformer?
No.
Is it a 3D shoot-em-up?
No, there is shooting in it. I'll give you that.
Was it made by Codemasters?
No.
Mastertronic?
No.
Ocean?
No.
Oh, God. Did you say it was... Okay, is it a platformer? No.
No.
Is it 3D?
Not really. It's got sort of pseudo 3D elements in it.
Is that 3D isometric?
No.
Come in a compilation pack?
It may have come in a compilation pack. I don't know.
gosh, I'm not going to give up 2 weeks in a row. Let's try and guess. Come on, people. Listeners, help me out.
Would you like some clues?
Go on then, throw me a clue.
Okay, it was based on a film.
Oh, it's a text-based adventure then.
Nope.
Oh, it's not?
Nope.
Lord of the Rings?
No.
It's based on a film. Ghostbusters?
Yes!
Yes! I had a feeling, because I was thinking, throughout the podcast, you must have mentioned something. And I thought, yes, I'm glad I got that right. So, yeah, that was Name the Game. I basically got one. And Darren, sadly, didn't get it.
I failed miserably.
All right, I'll tell you what. We're going to start rounding this podcast up now. Because, okay. You know... All right, so is there anything, you know, you'd like to say thank you to anyone?
Well...
Anything you'd like to promote and so on?
I mean, I'd like to say thank you and hello to everyone on the forums. If you're not on the forums at the moment, then get down there. I mean, we've got a lovely community. I'd like to say thank you to yourself and also to the guys from Retro Resistance and the other team members of Retro Asylum. I think that's about it, really.
I'll tell you what, I've been looking forward to actually hearing your voice, actually, because you've been helping us out on the Retro Asylum for quite some time now on the forum, and it's always a little bit strange hearing, you know, what the other person sounds like.
Yeah, I'm the man of mystery.
So, yeah, Darren, I just wanted to say thank you very much for actually taking the time to be on the show. You know, I've really enjoyed it. And look forward to sort of chatting to you more on the Asylum forum.
Yeah, well,
thanks for all your help.
Well, thank you for having me on the podcast. I mean, it's great to actually speak to you finally.
Absolute pleasure, mate. See, before you go, though,
yeah.
So how do you feel like now actually being on the podcast, or won't you know until you actually hear it back?
It's a strange experience. I mean, I've listened to your podcast for so long now. It's just kind of like it's my radio station in the car. So to actually be interacting with you just seems very, very odd. So I can't wait to hear it back, though.
All right. So to round up the show, then, I want you to pick a retro gaming tune. What sort of retro gaming tune would you like us to play?
Right. Okay. I've had to think about this, and I was thinking maybe the gameplay music from Treasure Island Dizzy. I mean,
I thought you were going to say the music from Alex Kidd and Miracle.
Oh, no. No, definitely not. I mean, that Treasure Island Dizzy was the first Dizzy game I ever played, and it sticks with me to this day, the music from that game. It's absolutely wonderful. You know, it was a very difficult game, but I mean, the music more than made up for it.
So did you say the title music or the...
The gameplay music.
The in-game music.
The in-game music, yes.
Alright, so hope you guys enjoy this, and we'll chat next time. See you guys later.
Cheers.